Welcome to a special interview on WIDE with Rob Severson from Gemini Comics, which is launching in Madison. Welcome, Rob. Why don't you give me some background about your project?
I will be happy to. Gemini Comics, we are a group of homegrown, homespun artisans who are going to create wonderful characters in a universe that is going to be defined by progressive values and progressive intuition, meaning that all of our titles, all of our characters are going to have progressive underpinnings woven throughout their adventures. We are going to create these characters and make sure that when the day is done, that the sorts of things that progressives all across the country care about will be reflected in the titles. So not only will you have folks with capes and masks and superpowers, but they'll also have the hearts and the minds of individuals who, like you and I, care about the world around us.
I guess Madison's a good place for this kind of a launch.
That would be true.
Have you ever run across another comic book series with this kind of focus?
No. As a matter of fact, as like everything else in pop culture, as the years wear on, it seems as though the lowest common denominator is being serviced almost entirely. Even if you look at the stalwarts, the shining examples of like Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, all of these characters whom I loved as a kid, all of these guys and gals these days are essentially existing to sell movie tickets and toys and drinks, and while some of that's to be expected, I think that when you've got a character like Superman, who is this wonderful, a Christ allegory, really, is what he is. Last son of Krypton, sent by the all-powerful to, save us. To see him selling movie tickets is, a little daunting to me.
I see you're wearing a Superman cap.
This
is one of the influences in your artistic background. What are some of the other ones?
Well, I grew up in the late 70s, early 80s, and back then, Marvel Comics was doing a much better job in terms of creating storylines that were complex about people who just happened to be superpowered. And there was a comic book called The X-Men in particular, written by Chris Claremont and drawn by an individual by the name of John Byrne. Their work together was fantastic. There was a literary quality to it, almost, in that the X-Men were what they call mutants. They were born with abilities, and so the rest of the world was afraid of them. All right. But you had this wonderful dichotomy. You had Professor X and Magneto. These were the opposing forces in mutantdom. But really, when you look at it, with the years of hindsight, what they were doing was it was really about civil rights. You had Professor X, who represented good, who was more of a Martin Luther King type character. And you had Magneto, who was more of a Malcolm X type, who was, we're going to get the humans before they get us, and by golly, we're going to take what's ours, et cetera, et cetera. So Claremont and Byrne, really kind of tickled my fancy, that and my brother, I had a twin brother. He and I just thought the stories and the art were so fantastic that we started to do things like write and draw ourselves. And you know, once as a kid, you know, once your imagination gets captured, you know, you kind of become a it becomes a very important part of you, you know, as you grow older. So other influences, there's a artist by the name of Barry Windsor Smith, who's probably most famous for drawing Conan the Barbarian. His line work is, he's essentially a fine artist who does comic books on the side. But I would say that those would be my two biggest influences.
Did you study art in college?
Oh yeah, yeah. I spent a number of, well, I started my collegiate career in theater, and that was a lot of fun. So much fun that I wound up having to go back to college after I recovered. But I spent actually a number of semesters at what is now Madison College. It used to be Madison Area Technical College. And I spent a number of semesters there learning how to draw the figure, you know, life drawing, and honing my skills there. And I actually, back in the early 90s, had some success getting into the comic book industry as an artist. But I made one mistake. That mistake was this. I was doing some fill-in work for a company by the name of Dark Horse, and I'd sent my Blue Line sketches to the editor, and he liked them, but he asked me if I could make my women more bodacious, he said. And I was like, bodacious? What do you mean? And he's like, well, you know what I mean, more... a little more, but you know, and you know, he just wasn't getting to it. And I was like, "You want larger breasts, right?" And he was like, "Well, yeah." And I'm like, "I'm not doing that," because I was like, "You cannot tell me that this character, you know, there's no need for it, you know." And my moral high ground, you know, probably cost me an earlier entry into the world of drawing and writing comic books than I otherwise would have, but. In the end, I guess I feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the other members of your team.
I have just the most amazing group of people. Most of them from Madison here. I've got my head writer is his name is Alan Hart, Alan J. Hart. If you've ever been to Glassnickel Pizza over the weekends. You may have seen him do some comedy sports there. He's part of the Funny Business Comedy Club. And is it Funny Business? Monkey Business? Yeah, one of the two. Anyway, he's a very, very talented writer and a very funny guy. He's providing the words, the stories, for two of our titles that we're getting ready to launch here. One is Luminary, classic high school set story of a young man who becomes imbued with powers and hijinks ensue. And the other book he is writing is called The Distance, which is you know, to me, a very exciting title. That book, in a nutshell, is about an experimental military craft that winds up getting marooned out in the galaxy, or maybe another galaxy somewhere. And the two humans on board are on board kind of by accident. One of them is an engineer who knows the ship back and forwards, a gay woman, and the man on board was hired to procure the ship, he's an African-American male, they get trapped in a, you know, a galaxy far, far away. And the title, The Distance, is referring, of course, not only to the length of space between here and there, but also then the distance between the two of them, as you know, they come from two totally divergent walks of life. And to me, I think there's a lot of ground there that can be explored, and a lot of interesting things that can happen there.
Now, your first issue is about to come out of what's that series?
Oh, Sergei the Spider. Sergei, it's so much fun to write Sergei. The thing that's interesting about him is not the surface stuff. You know, he's a Ukrainian who has built this vast energy empire, and you know, he has a come to Jesus or come to Gaia moment, however you want to put it. His mother is dying, and as his mother is dying, this entity essentially pops out of her and takes him to the woodshed, you know, essentially saying, look, your mother is dying, yes, but you are hurting everyone's mother, Mother Earth, with this energy empire of yours, and how dare you? But, you know, and it shakes him up, and he realizes, yeah, what the heck am I doing? You know, I made this promise to my mother back when I was 8. I made this promise to my father. He was born with spider-like powers, all right? His father had been experimented on by the Soviet Army back in the 80s. And his father and the four other soldiers and the experimentation program, it was thought to be a total bomb because no powers ever surfaced with any of the subjects. Turns out that those abilities were passed on to the subsequent generation. But, so he's born like this, and everyone's afraid of him, all right? You know, as a child, you know, he's stronger, he's faster, he's literally got eyes in the back of his head. They look like moles, but anyway. So, you know, he, throughout Kiev, you know, he's isolated. His parents decide to homeschool him. He doesn't have great relationships with anybody, and everyone's afraid of him. So he gets whatever he wants. And the thing that's so interesting about writing this character is that, you know, he has this moment of clarity, and he decides, I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy, but he doesn't know how. You know, so he's, I don't want to say he's conflicted or he's dark or any of that, because that's been done to death. But the thing is, he wants to do good, but doesn't exactly know how. And it's very interesting to sit down and write dialogue for a guy like that. You know, he wants to crack jokes and people laugh, but he realizes they're laughing because they're afraid of him, not because he's particularly funny. Yeah, so I mean, it's a great, great story. And we're going to have Trump. Trump is actually going to appear in the pages of Sergei the Spider, as is Putin.
Is Sergei coming to America, or is Trump going?
No, Sergei is coming here. I've got the first 6 issues planned out. In round about issue 3, things are going to get very strange for Sergei. He's going to be accused of doing something that is going to be pretty shocking. But part of the way it winds up will be that he'll be able to come here and make his home here as he and his compatriots struggle to fix the damage that not only he himself has wrought, but that the rest of mankind has wrought on the earth. And I've been learning a lot about science as I've been writing this. It's a very daunting, very scary, but also fascinating field. you know, to look into the actual mechanisms behind climate change and once you separate the politics and all that other stuff out of it, just the science of climate is fascinating, fascinating.
So will the future issues deal with some of the current issues that are coming out from our current president?
Oh, yes, most definitely, most definitely. I decided that Sergei was going to be Ukrainian. I've had this character kind of banging around my head for the better part of 20 years, but I decided to make him Ukrainian specifically because of what's going on over in Ukraine, in Crimea. I've kind of got it set up that in real life, that everyone knows that Vladimir Putin just wants to get, wants to have the Ukraine back. He wants it back. But in my comic book, I've made it so that the reason why Vladimir Putin wants the Ukraine back is because of this infrastructure that Sergei has control over. And so there's like a, the politics of the day are going to be reflected in the pages of the comic book that we that we're putting together. One of the greatest resources I have is another one of my team members. His name is Aldous Tyler. You might even know Aldous.
Actually, he was on the station
for
a little while.
Yeah, yeah.
Before he went to WSUM.
Yeah, well, his wonderfully golden throat aside, he's also an incredibly, incredibly talented colorist. And I myself am colorblind. I'm red-green colorblind, which, as you can imagine, is a limiting factor for an artist, which is why I work really well in black and white. And in fact, for your listeners here, I wear pretty much gray, blue, and black, not because I'm cool. Of course I am, but it's because I can see it. But anyway, so Aldous, an amazing, amazing colorist. He does all of our colors and all of our letters as well. So if you ever go back to a live format, you should hire Aldous as a guy.
So what does it look like when you're creating an issue? Do you have an office space where people get together and work as a team? Or?
Yeah, well, it's now at my house. It used to be, Gemini Comics, this is a great part of the story. Last January, I answered an ad looking for artists and writers for a new comic book publishing startup in Madison, Wisconsin. And I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, right up my alley. Yeah. And answered the ad. I met this this man and his wife. They just moved to Wisconsin from, I believe it was the Carolinas, and he was going to start up this comic book company. And he was taken with me and put me in charge of recruiting staff and hiring staff. And, he would allow me to, write and draw my own book. I just had to kind of be the office manager and the managing editor, this sort of thing. Now, and he also procured an office on International Lane over there by the airport. And so that was our working space, the bullpen, I like to call it. This individual I knew as Matt Clark. And the name of the company was going to be Clarkster Comics. Terrible name. Terrible name. But I was willing to put up with it, of course, because, he's paying the bills. So Matt disappeared. He just up and disappears. And this is like right after I'd hired about 8 people to draw and color and ink and write. And he disappears. And I talked to his wife. I'm like, where the heck is Matt? And she's like, oh, he's in California. You know, he'll be back. Don't worry. Everything's cool. And I get a piece of mail at the office space, addressed to Richard Clark. I'm like, why? Huh, that's odd. You know, I know him as Matt. So did a little research, and it turned out that the individual that I knew as Matt, whose real name was Richard, was in the Pokey. He was in the Pokey up in Portage County under 7 felony counts of what amounted to be embezzlement. So I bring this up because the office at International Lane was also then like 2 months behind rent and all this other stuff. So, you know, I decided to, you know, I rebranded everything, made sure that, and all the people that I'd hired still wanted to be part of it. So, you know, I rebranded everything, took over the lease at International Lane with the management, and made it Gemini Comics to honor my brother, who died some years back, a twin brother. So Gemini Comics. So, but the long and the short of it is, when, you know, we had the space, but it's overhead, you know, and you know, it's not just the rent, it's the utilities and all that other stuff. So, you know, it costs roughly $1,300 to $1,500 to have printed 1,000 issues of a given comic book. So, you know, 2 months worth of rent was 1 month's worth of printing. So I, you know, just doing the simple math, we decided to take the materials that were in the office at International Lane and take them to the near east side of town, to my house, where my border collie is much happier to hang out. So the office is now the home, so I can, you know, pretty much roll right out of the rack and go downstairs to work every day. So that's the office now.
Okay. And how many people do you have actively involved in the issue that issues that you're working on?
Well, let's see. I've got it's myself. I do the writing and the penciling and inking for Sergey the Spider. I have Aldous, who does my lettering and coloring for all the issues. I've got an editor. I've got all together, you know, I've got we've got about 8 people on staff. Luminary, the second title, is being written by Al Hart. I'm providing what they call breakdown pencils, breakdown pencils are essentially, instead of like, you know, highly detailed developed pencils that you would then subsequently ink, you know, it's more basic shape and setting of perspective and this sort of thing. I'm doing the breakdowns for that. Then another really talented kid by the name of Hunter Bell is going to do the finished artwork on those before it gets sent to Aldous. And for the distance, I've got another 2 local individuals, a kid by the name of Casey Humble, who's a Civil War reenactor, by the way. It's incredible stuff. And another individual by the name of Greg Prey, who lives in Waterloo, I believe. He's going to be doing the finished artwork on that. So I've all together, we've got about 8 or so people on staff, either actively working on stuff now or soon to be doing something.
So is there money to pay them at present? Or?
Yes. No. I wish I could tell you that the money tree that I planted in the backyard had sprouted. Part of the horror that accompanied the discovery of the Matt versus Richard Clark dichotomy was the fact that, you know, he had made all kinds of wonderful promises about, you know, paying people X, Y, and Z. But when it came right down to it, there wasn't much there. You know, he didn't really have all the money that he had said he would. Surprise. So when I took it over, what I did was I created a different business model where once a given issue makes it into the black, then the artisans who created that issue will then subsequently be paid per roll on a percentage basis. The industry standard, without really boring the living heck out of you and your listeners here, the artists generally get paid per page, you know, be it, you know, $300, $400 per page for finished pencils, or $400 per page for finished inks, whatever it is. But what I've done now is created a situation by which per roll, you know, they're getting paid something like 8 or 10% of the profit per roll. So like if you've got, you know, somebody who is the writer and artist, you know, they'll get 16% of the fine, you know, of profit as it rolls on. So, and this is part of the reason why I love the people I work with so much, because not only are they working for free until the stuff gets out there and profitable, and I joke about that, but the real thing is that, you know, these are people who love, they've got a lifelong love of comics, and, you know, they also understand and appreciated the situation that occurred when, you know, the chicanery of Mr. Clark was revealed. You know, I believe we are the only comic book company in the history of comic book companies that started out with a CEO who was, in fact, a supervillain. But these folks appreciated the candor and the honesty. And, you know, we had this, as I mentioned before, we had this meeting. It was supposed to be a 3-hour meeting, but it was a 5-hour meeting of all the folks that I'd hired to sit down and talk about the universe and talk about what, you know, who was going to be working on what and what their interests were. And it was a meeting that lasted, was 5 hours, because we all got along so great. And, you know, to turn around and call those people not 3 days later and tell them that, it turns out that your pal Rob here was gotten over on by this guy. To call them up and say, your dreams are temporarily dashed, do you still want in? And to have them all say, yes, you know, we believe in the universe, we believe in you, we believe in, you know, the stories and the characters, to have them all want to be part of it. It was, you know, you could have knocked me over with a feather. You really could have. Wonderful people.
So they're investing their time and hoping for the best.
Yeah, yeah.
And what about the printing? You have a commercial printer in town that will do it?
I wish. Everyone that I spoke to in town either couldn't handle the physical nature of the, like when you print magazines and print comic books, you know, there's a specific order that the pages have to be, you know, bound and whatnot. And the colors, the whole world of printing is different now with the advent of the computer and Photoshop and whatnot. You know, back in the day, comic book publishers had essentially a predetermined palette that had to be used. You know, deals would be made with the printer, and they would make sure that they had the colors necessary to print out. But everything's different. And I went through, and there were printers in town here who could do it, but it would cost me 2 to 3 times what I could get with a printing outfit out of Indiana. And as a matter of fact, I had spoke to one printer who, and I couldn't believe this, they offered like this ridiculously low rate. I was like, wow, I can't believe it. You know, but it turned out what they were doing was you send them the files and it gets sent to China.
Oh.
It gets sent to China. Mm. And then the Chinese, you know, the printing company then prints it and sends it back on the boat to the, you know, United States, and then gets distributed. And, you know, I wasn't going to do that. You know, I just could not bring myself to participate in not only the outsourcing of jobs and whatnot, but the, you know, to me, the environmental, you cannot tell me that shipping tons of stuff back and forth, you know, I mean, the environmental damage and the socio-political nastiness of it was just something I wasn't going to deal with. So I did find somebody who could do it out of Indiana that was a little bit more expensive than this outfit, but you know, I would rather do that and sleep well than not. But I just couldn't, you know, maybe in the future if we get successful enough, I'll be able to find somebody in town who maybe I can, you know, then shoulder that, but right now I can't, you know, it's a regret.
So when you place an order with this printer, how long does it take them to create, what, 1,000 copies?
It doesn't take that long. The first thing they'll do is they'll create a proof for me. Mm-hmm. And send that overnight. And then once you stamp that okay, it takes 5 days to turn that around and get them, and they'll send me however many issues I order. The price goes down the more the more you order. But we're intending on doing is we're going to be offering the comic book as a download, an e-comic book for the millennials out there who you know, have sworn off anything that you or I would think as legitimate, but also hard copies for the salty dogs out there who still like that visceral experience of holding something in their hand and feeling the paper and smelling the print.
So all your issues will be available in both forms?
Yep. And you know, to me, there's nothing beats. You know, like, for example, I've never read a book on a Kindle, and I never will, because I love that visceral experience of, you know, turning the page, you know, feeling the piece of paper between your fingers and being able to, you know, earmark it. You know what I mean? Write mm-hmm. little notes and stuff. And the smell of a book. And the comic book is the same way. There's just something really special about seeing that thing right in front of you and having it, you know. And plus, you got to have something to sign for your fans.
So do you have distributors lined up for the paper copies?
We have. Right now, I'm in the process of jumping through an extraordinary amount of hoops, and many of those hoops on fire, I might add. To get with the main and, in fact, only distributor of comic books in the country. You know, they bought... There used to be a comic book distributor in town here that was based out of Madison here that were called Capital City Distributors. But they were bought out by, you know, this particular company. Diamond. That's their Diamond Comic Book Distribution, and they're a monopoly. They're the only one. So I mean, you have to, in order to get distributed by them, you have to be able to prove or to meet a number of threshold criteria that they determine as being germane and necessary. And it's really funny, they, you know, one of their criteria is to demonstrate that you've sold 1,500 copies of something. And, you know, of course, the question that comes to mind is, well, how do you sell 1,500 copies of anything without a distributor? You know, it's the classic catch-22. Somewhere, Joseph Heller is laughing till he wets his pants, you know. But anyway, so we are going to be distributed by Diamond. I've got to finish the marketing plan. We've got a Facebook page set up. We've already been part of their criteria is to show that you've got a body of evidence of existence out in the World Wide Web. So we've not only got the Facebook, but also we've had a number of trade magazines, e-magazines, websites, do stories on us. You know, Bleeding Cool News, Graphics Today, excuse me, and some others. So, you know, they run stories about you. You can then show Diamond, look, we exist, and people are interested. So, yes, we will be distributed. I'm also going to do a fair amount of, you know, we're very interested in, you know, it's going to take a while to get Diamond to accept us and whatnot. You know, it could be a couple of months yet. So in the meantime, in between time, I'm working on, you know, talking to retailers in Madison here and in Milwaukee to see if they want to do an exchange where I give them free advertising. They give me shelf space. So, and I think that's...
So advertising in the issues?
Yeah, yeah.
Where will that be? The covers?
In the pages in between and on the back cover. There's space, but not much space left. If you want to advertise with us, talk to me now. But in all seriousness, there's there is space on the inside of the comic book to that I've dedicated for that. And it's I think it'll work out. I've got we're also going to be doing personal appearances. There are comic book stores in Madison here, Westfields Comics, Capital City Comics right down Monroe Street there, Graham Cracker Comics, do an appearance there, you know, sign comics and, you know, again, you know, there are a number of different ways to advertise with them and us to make that exchange, so...
So your first issue is at the printer now?
It is, actually, it is in the hands of Aldous Tyler, who is putting the finishing touches on the last bit of edits so that I can send it to the printer, which will be tonight yet. I've made a promise to the universe that I will be on my birthday sending the... finished material to the printer today. So, yeah.
So you send it like priority mail or something?
Well, just email.
Oh,
just email.
Okay.
It's a large file, mm-hmm. But which what you do is the technocrats, the wizards out there listening, will know this. But in Photoshop. What you do is the files themselves are very high resolution, but they're PDFs. Mm-hmm. So the PDFs are, you know, small per page in terms of the sheer amount of data. But when you collect them, it's a larger file. But the printer, obviously, it's Jack Prints out of Indiana. You know, they've got servers that can handle that. So once they get it, they'll process and send me approve, I approve, and then all of a sudden my house would be filled with comic books. My wife has been very supportive, and she's like, oh, sure, bring the office home. And I'm like, well, you know what this means, right? And she's like, well, it doesn't matter. Everything will be fine. I'm going to use those words in 6 months, I know, when there is like a room, you know, with excess comics in it. Where did all these comics come from? But they'll be shipped back to me.
So once you have this room full of comics, will you be having some sort of kickoff event or signing at outlets, that sort of thing?
Yeah. That is the power of Facebook right there. I mean, Facebook and other social media. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm trying to work, I guess, who's ever going to give me the best infrastructural setup. You know, it's either going to be Westfield's or Graham Cracker in town here to do a, a signing and then a kickoff event, as you say. I want to make sure that I've got not only the people who work on Sergei, but, also Luminary, which is the second title that's coming out, and then The Distance, the third one. I want to make sure that the creative staff for each of those books will be able to attend, and so we have to have space and the proper amount of interest drummed up and whatnot.
Okay. Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to do it, and it's really a lifelong dream. I mentioned at the beginning of this, picking up those X-Men comic books when my brother and I were, we must have been like 12 years old, and when the imagination of a young person gets captured, it's captured forever. And it was always been a dream to write and draw a comic book. And here I am sitting in your studio telling you that that's exactly what I'm doing. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's a very, the challenges of doing a startup under the circumstances that we were presented with, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But to have your dreams come true, and also to be able to incorporate the things that you believe in, progressive ideals, and to be able to incorporate that into the universe that you have helped create, it's nothing short of magic, my friend.
Okay, well, thanks for coming in for the interview, and good luck.
Thank you.